Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're peeling back the layers on one of biology's greatest puzzles.
A really big one.
Yeah, how do organisms actually survive catastrophic environmental shifts? We're looking at biological invasions as a kind of natural experiment.
Right.
And our mission today is really to uncover the cellular secrets that let an organism adapt and adapt repeatedly to what should be lethal chaos.
And we have the perfect subject for this deep dive. The invasive Ascidian Ciona robusta.
Fascinating creature.
It really is. It's a sessile marine invertebrate, which means it's stuck in one place. It can't swim away when things get tough.
And yet, it has colonized coastal areas all over the world, surviving these huge swings in salinity that would kill most other marine life. So the trick they use to survive, say, being sloshed around in a ship's ballast water where the salt level is all over the place, it's not about changing their DNA.
No, not at all. It's about flexibility. Rapid flexibility.
What we call phenotypic plasticity. Mm. The ability to change your form or function without actually changing your genes.
Precisely. And that plasticity is key for invasion success. And the molecular tool they use, the sort of emergency lever, is microRNAs or miRNAs.
These tiny little regulators.
Tiny regulators. They don't make proteins themselves, but they tell other genes when to turn on or off. Think of them as the organism's molecular shortcut.
So the big takeaway from this research is that these miRNAs and the networks they form are the engine. They're what allows for these rapid, dynamic, and this is crucial, reversible responses to stress.
It's flexibility on demand, no waiting for evolution.
Okay, so let's start with the kinetics. How fast is this response? When Ciona robusta gets hit with that first wave of high salinity, what happens?
It's instant. And it's massive.
You could really see that in the data, couldn't you? In that initial analysis, the samples from the first stress and the second stress, they just formed their own distinct cluster.
Completely separate from the control group.
It's like they flipped a switch and turned on a whole new operating system.
They absolutely did. And the speed is what's so remarkable. Within just 24 hours of that first shock, you see dozens of these differentially expressed miRNAs.
Meaning they've either ramped way up or shut way down.
Exactly. And that quick, targeted response is just essential for surviving a sudden change.
But the really incredible part, for an organism that's facing a constantly changing environment, isn't just flipping the switch on, it's being able to flip it off again.
Precisely. When the animals were given a short recovery period, just a day, their miRNA profile just snapped right back.
Back to control levels.
Back to looking like the unstressed group. This shows incredible flexibility, but also, you know, economy. It's not wasting energy staying on high alert when the danger has passed.
That makes perfect sense for an invader. If you're in ballast water, it's always changing. High salt, low salt, back again. If your response isn't reversible, you'd just burn out.
And it wasn't just some, you know, simple on-off switch. The response was incredibly specific to the stage and the duration of the stress. Most of these miRNAs only changed at very specific moments.
So it's a carefully orchestrated defense. Okay, let's unpack this a bit. If the organism needs this huge dynamic response, the concentration of these miRNA molecules has to change fast. And we saw that their overall abundance went up as the stress went on.
It did, especially in those later stages, which brings up a really fundamental question.
Right.
When you see more of a molecule, is it because the organism stopped cleaning it up, or did it start making more of it? Less decay or more production?
Minimizing the garbage or maximizing the factory output? So which was it for Ciona?
It was overwhelmingly the factory output. And this is a really key insight. The global increase in miRNAs is almost entirely driven by ramping up the whole miRNA biogenesis pathway.
They turn on the factory.
They turn on the factory. The organism is reading the sustained stress as a signal to start manufacturing more of this regulatory material.
And which parts of that assembly line are working overtime?
It's the core machinery. The genes responsible for the initial processing and then exporting the miRNAs out into the cell to do their job, they were all significantly ramped up.
So they're proactively building up this arsenal of regulatory ammunition.
That's a great way to put it. It allows them to fine-tune gene expression on demand really quickly instead of waiting for slower changes.
That's a huge energy commitment. It just shows how critical these miRNAs are for them. They're prioritizing the tools of plasticity.
And this is where the story gets really interesting. It moves beyond just the immediate reaction to, well, a learned response.
Oh.
When the Cionas were hit with a second round of high salinity, they didn't just react. They reacted better. Mm-hmm. We saw what's called stress memory.
Okay, so there are different kinds of stress memory, right?
Yes, and they showed what's known as type 2 stress memory. This means that the second time they face the stress, their response is enhanced. It's stronger than the first time.
It's like they studied for the test.
Exactly. The first time was a scramble. The second time, the key molecular pathways were already primed and ready to react more aggressively.
That's incredible, but how do you know it's a real memory and not just, say, lingering effects from that first stress?
That's the critical question. And we could confirm it was a molecular memory because it showed up in both the miRNAs themselves and, more importantly, in their downstream targets, the genes they regulate.
So the miRNA changed more dramatically the second time around,
Right.
and it caused a bigger change in the genes it was controlling.
Exactly. Whether it was turning a gene up or down, the magnitude of that change was greater during the second stress. This confirms that miRNAs are helping to facilitate that memory formation at the mRNA level. They carry the experience.
And what kinds of jobs were these memory genes doing? What were they trying to get better at?
The memories were tied to the most critical survival tasks, things like regulating mRNA stability, keeping the cell's instructions from falling apart, and most importantly, things related to ion transport.
Like potassium channels.
Specific potassium channels, yeah. The memory being formed is directly about getting better and faster at balancing their internal salts when they're challenged again.
So let's tie this all together. You have the rapid response, the ramped up production, this new stress memory. What does it all add up to for survival? What biological functions were these miRNAs actually controlling?
The main job is osmotic homeostasis, keeping that internal water and salt balance stable. And to do that, Siono was using its miRNAs to regulate two primary canonical strategies.
Okay.
First, ion transport, that's actively pumping salts in and out of the cells. And second, free amino acid, or FAA, metabolism.
Wait, free amino acids, how are they involved in balancing salt?
They act as what are called compatible osmolytes. They're small molecules the cell can produce in high concentrations to basically match the salty environment outside.
Without messing up the proteins inside the cell.
Exactly. It's a strategy you use when just pumping ions isn't quite enough.
So it has two tools in the toolkit, fast ion pumping and this slower, deeper FAA strategy. Did it use them at the same time?
No, and this is key. They shifted between them. We saw a clear functional strategy transformation. During the acute phase of that second stress, they doubled down on regulating ion transport.
Adjusting those channels for metal ions, calcium, and so on.
Right, but then the focus on FAA metabolism really kicked in during the recovery stage.
Ah, so it's a stage-dependent approach.
Very sophisticated. They use the fast mechanism ion pumping to survive the immediate threat. And then they use the FAAs as a kind of longer-term adjustment to prepare the cell for the next shock. The miRNAs are the switchboard operator directing which tool to use and when.
You know, when most of us learn about miRNAs, we learn the simple version. They bind to the 3-UTR region of a gene to turn it down, to repress it.
The canonical view.
Right, the textbook definition. But this study showed that Siana is playing by a very different set of rules.
Significantly different. The regulatory network it uses is far more complex. We found two really striking things that challenge that traditional view.
Okay, let's start with where they bind. Where were the miRNAs attaching to the genes?
Well, instead of that traditional 3-UTR spot, we found that almost 90% of the binding sites were in the coding sequence, the CDS region.
In the middle of the instructions for making the protein, that's highly unusual.
Very unusual. And it suggests that this species has evolved a way to fine-tune protein synthesis with more precision. Binding in the CDS might allow for more diverse outcomes than just simple repression.
And the second surprising thing was the result of that binding. It wasn't just repression, was it?
Far from it. While about half, a little over half, of the pairs showed the negative correlation we'd expect,
Repression.
a shocking 45% showed positive expression correlations. The miRNA seemed to be enhancing or promoting the expression of its target.
That feels totally counterintuitive. The molecule known as a repressor is acting like an accelerator almost half the time.
Exactly. And we think this complexity, the diverse binding sites, the dual positive and negative control, is what gives the organism its incredible resilience. You need negative control to shut down things you don't need, but you also need positive control to quickly activate essential survival proteins, like those ion channels. It's this multidimensional regulation that powers its success as an invader.
So to summarize this deep dive, Chiona robusta is just an absolute masterclass in invasion. It survives these life-threatening salt shifts by using a rapid, dynamic, and memory-enhanced miRNA network.
A network it fuels by actively ramping up its own production machinery.
Right, and it uses that network to dynamically shift between different survival strategies, hitting ion transport hard during stress, and then focusing on amino acids during recovery.
And this really shows that mRNA-mediated regulation is a core driver of that phenotypic plasticity we talked about. It's not just about surviving the moment. It provides these new raw materials that natural selection can then act upon. It bridges that gap between short-term survival and long-term evolution.
The ultimate molecular head start in the race to survive.
Which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you. If these mRNAs really are a missing link in how plasticity drives evolution, the so-called plasticity-first hypothesis, then how quickly can an invasive species forget? How fast can it discard or rewrite these stress memories once it colonizes an environment that's finally stable? Does the cost of maintaining all that amazing flexibility eventually outweigh the benefit once the chaos finally stops?